What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Katie Helper Show. You can hear the Katie Helper Show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WBAI. That's 99.5 FM or WBAI.org. You can also find us on SoundCloud and iTunes, where you can rate and review us, which we'd love for you to do. On today's show, we bring you a little bit of podcaster on podcaster action. Gabe Pacheco and I speak to Brett Payne and Brian Quimby, the co-hosts of Street Fight, which is a great radio show, which has become a kind of hotline for the working class. I'm just going to call it that. And to hear the extended interview, make sure that you become Patreon members. And to do that, just go to patreon.com/thekatiehelpershow. Again, that's patreon.com/thekatiehelpershow. Katie Helper Show. So happy to be here, as usual. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Gabe Pacheco.
Hey, everybody. Great to be here today.
Thanks, Gabe. Great to have you.
All right.
And we are recording live, New York City, and we have at least two very special guests today. We are talking to Brett Payne and Brian Quimby. You may know them as the hosts of Street Fight Radio, which is one of the top five anarcho-comedy shows on any station across the nation.
Sorry, it's actually number one.
Well, I know, but we're going to get into this because we've found some other ones that are also three times a week and live call-in. Okay. It's really awkward. But yeah, this is a great anarcho-comedy show. We'll go out on a limb. We don't usually give our endorsement, but we'll say it's the number one anarcho-comedy radio show.
Yay, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you can put that on your website.
I like this coalition building since ours is number one socialist comedy radio show?
Yeah, socialist, feminist, Chicano, Jewish.
Sure, all those things.
Number three, maybe top five.
Just get an award printed and it's official.
Yeah, okay. We can give each other awards.
We actually have some awards left from an old show that we did. We can bring, but they're they say participation trophy.
Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wanted to know if you could talk to us about how this whole thing started, how you guys started doing radio, how you guys met each other, what makes you tick?
We did an old show together that was, so we're both kind of fans of, I guess we're like both fans of comedy, like edgy comedy radio when we were younger. I was very much into like Howard Stern and Opie and Anthony. I was a cable guy, so I drove around all day, and that's 9 hours of radio if you listen to all of it, you know? So, Brett was listening to podcasts at the time, and we got together with two other guys and we did like a straight up comedy podcast, and we just ended up working together. They went on vacation once.
Ooh,
we did a show together. And they said who would ever want to listen to that. And so we decided to do it by ourselves. And now here's where we are.
What happened to those two?
Well, they're just doing their 9-to-5 jobs still.
Oh, wow.
They're the Pete Bests.
Yeah. Wow. It happens, you know? It's like, I mean, I can sort, part of me understands that, like, the things we were talking about were really things that, like, nobody was, like, we were just, like, oh, you steal, your 401k is bullshit. None of that stuff's going to be around. The whole world's crumbling around us. So, like, you can definitely see where somebody would be like, oh, I don't know, this isn't very positive radio.
Not knee slapping.
No.
Painting a bleak picture of the future.
Very.
Yeah, we also went off, Ohio State Buckeyes are like the biggest sports team in town. And we also went off about how they use the players and that they deserve money. And that's not a very popular sentiment in Columbus at all. You'll get a battery thrown at you for saying that.
I like the way that, like, what you said that you used to talk about, like how you know, nothing's going to be around, everything's going to hell. It's funny because that can either be super, like, anarcho-leftist, or it can be, like, Jeff Foxworthy, angry, conservative, white guy.
Well, that's what we were, too. I mean, a lot of it, when we were first coming together, was not to try and copy someone else's style. That's why we adopted like square cut pizza as like one of our signatures, because it's something that we have in Ohio that we're proud of. Everybody on the coast screams at us about triangle cut pizza. So it's like, well, we're going to stay true to who we are. And we are, I mean, just rednecks. I was raised the most orthodox redneck you can get, like monster truck pulls, horror movies, alcoholic problems, the worst of the worst. So I know what that's about, and I'm not going to change. But my politics came about, I think, when I got out of my house and started doing psychedelic drugs a lot. That kind of washed away a lot of my conservative upbringing that runs in my family, and it was a chance for me to like try to have some empathy for the rest of the world and kind of figure out, you know, that I have a lot more in common with people than I think, you know.
Yes.
I went through the rapid, like, I don't know if it's, I feel like it's like such a cliched move here. I worked at a cable company, drove around a truck all day, listened to Rush Limbaugh, was conservative for probably 6 months in 2003. Then
wow, that recently,
got super into Ron Paul in like 2008. Then Barack Obama, and then anarchists. Like, I basically about 90 days after Obama was president, I was like, it's all rigged. None of this works. You know, you know what I mean? Like, he hadn't done anything.
Because the whole Kenya thing, right?
No, I just felt like he hadn't done anything.
We were on the porch. It was like 3 months in, and he's like, Guantanamo's still open. Yeah. And I'm like, I mean, come on, guy. You got to let him draft up some papers, maybe get it
through. Saying Guantanamo's still open.
Yeah, he was mad about that.
And you were trying to be more patient.
Yeah, I was like, let's just draft up some papers and workshop it.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is a secret socialist, and I think we're going to get everything we want.
If we just wait until the second term, that's when it's really going to pop off. The first term is all just appeasement.
And then the drone strike thing, just like
socialism,
everybody else, the drone strike thing is what got both. I think both of us, it was like the first 20 shows we did were probably about, this guy's killing kids. It was drones all the time.
Yeah. Well, my favorite, like the drone thing for me was just kids in Afghanistan have PTSD whenever they see, on cloudy days, they're happy. Because, like, the drones can't see them.
Yeah.
If it's clear outside and sunny, they're terrified.
Yeah. And it's like, that's what made our show kind of have that left point of view, was that it was like, wow, these are human beings over there. They're not like, somebody I remember a long time ago that we used to fight with on the internet called it like an abstract concept. That you're not worried about the people over here. You would walk over a dead body on the street.
Right.
But these drone strikes are some abstract concept. And I'm like, but the people who died are not like an abstract concept.
You know, it's funny how there's an absolute like liberal embrace of nationalism. Like, I know that that's built into liberalism, but I thought that like woke liberals pretended not to embrace that, but they really own it. And the famous tweet that brings to mind from the hashtag resistance is Imani Gandhi's tweet where she says, I prioritize American uteri over drones and you will fucking deal.
Yeah.
But the best thing about that tweet is she said, I prioritize the uteri of American women over drones and you will fucking deal. The best thing about that is that she then came forward to apologize. She checked her privilege and she said, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said women. I should have said people. I'm still learning. Because she was being transphobic.
Right.
But what she did not apologize about was just saying, you know, creating the zero-sum game, mutually exclusive struggle of wanting to have an abortion and wanting to be alive in another country.
Yeah.
The only way that that works is if there were some repatriation, like asylum program where people were trying to actually put refugees into women's uteri.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, people's uteri. I'm still learning. But she really, like, you know, she doubles down on that and says, you know, it's just a bunch of Bernie bros and socialists who hate black women who object to that.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's weird to be mad because people care about people getting killed overseas. Like, we don't hit it as much now. It's still something that I totally, like, the John Bolton thing has shook me back into, like, you know,
love, that crush that you had on him.
Well, I did. I never liked him. He came later. Yeah. He's Yosemite Sam to me. Like, I look at that guy.
Yeah,
I just look at him and I'm like, he's just once. I feel like every day he spends time shooting guns in the air just because he loves the noise of death.
He's so extreme that the George Bush, the senior, called him in his cabal crazies.
Yeah. Yeah,
and George Bush had to recess appoint him during recess because even Republicans wouldn't vote for him. My favorite thing about him is when he actually said in a debate, a public debate, he said about the UN, look, the UN headquarters in New York is 11 stories, however many stories. You get rid of the top three, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Secretariat building in New York has 38 stories. If you lost 10 stories today, it wouldn't make a bit of difference.
Which I like that he was measured in his response. Like a more unhinged hawk would say, like, just demolish the whole building.
Yeah.
But he's like a moderate, so he wants to keep some of the structure intact.
The point is there is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests. And when we can get others to go along.
And so what worries me is, like, is there going to be an anti-war movement this time? There doesn't feel like there is one anymore. And I'm guilty, too. We, you know, mostly talk about poverty and domestic stuff and everyday life. I mean, it's kind of, war isn't our beat, really. But, like, I do have, like, a lot of concern that, like, is anybody going to show up to stop these definitely wars that are going to happen soon? Like, it's not, I don't think there's any question in my mind that they've got like 3 years or 2 years left. And this guy has never not, like, he spends all of his time thinking, like, which country should we blow up?
Yeah.
He never, that's his whole thing. And I just feel like, I'm real nervous. I'm actually real nervous about it.
Well, and this actually, like, this is when the show, really, the genesis of the show started was 2008, 2009, when the stock market crash happened and Barack Obama came in and we were having these conversations and social media had not caught up yet and people were like, thought we were, you know, were just to criticize the systems, you know, like everybody thinks that the system is going to write itself out or that it just keeps working. And then we're like, but if you keep looking at the system and the way it works, the more people get marginalized, we're stretching out so that people are poorer than they've ever been. And there's no return on going to work every single week. And they're like, that's when they just said, well, that's really a negative thing to say. It's like,
stop. Yeah.
You're a homeowner. So it's nice. I'm sitting here renting a one bedroom apartment. So.
Yeah.
I listen to Street Fight pretty religiously. And it was after, really, I got into you guys after I heard Chapo mention you. But one thing that, like, I can listen to other podcasts for foreign policy. What I like that you guys do is it's like CNN for, like, people at workers.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, having constant articles that are just like the petty tyrants that are small business owners.
Yeah. Monsters, actually. I just got a thing. I just actually got a sign on my Twitter. We get a lot of stuff. Like, people send pictures of their workplace.
Yeah.
A lot. And one of my favorite things, and if I'm Murder Brian on Twitter, please send me pictures of memo. I love memos. Yeah. Nothing gets me going like a memo. And the one I just saw was like, if you keep putting your cigarette, if you don't put your cigarette butts in the ashtray, then you will lose your smoking privileges. And I'm like, how do you tell an adult that they're going to lose their smoking privileges?
Where were they putting their cigarettes though?
Probably throwing them on the ground. Oh, look, okay, yeah.
I just didn't even know. I haven't worked in an office in a while and I don't smoke, so I was wondering if there's like some practice that I didn't know about, like under the desk or something.
I'm not defending litterers. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you can't talk to, that's what these small business people talk to people like children. Somebody sent me, I think, 18 pictures of signs that their boss had hung over all over their work telling them what to do. Or the famous, like, the thing that we both learned that we had never heard about from Duke, we both have learned on this show, is the intense surveillance that people work under. Like, these bosses sit at home and watch the workers on surveillance cameras and then call them and yell at them all day.
You don't even need to go foreign policy, because this is like a microcosm, like, of the surveillance state.
Yes.
And like, foreign policy is just, you get to extend from what you're talking about into the larger realms.
It's that paternalistic attitude of like, I'm in charge, you should be thankful, you get what you get. Yeah. It was hard for me, so I'm not going to make it any easier for you.
And these small business owners are the people that vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You could, if anybody who's met one would know that immediately. Actually, the small business tyrant concept came actually from, I worked at a camera store and I was making $8.50 an hour. And this was in 2016. So I went to a Bernie Sanders rally just to see the people that were outside of it. And the owner of the store that was paying me $8.50 an hour without insurance was at the Bernie Sanders rally. And I just look at this guy and I'm like, you know, you could do, you have the power here, buddy.
So what happened?
Just in my mind, I was like, these people don't even know that they're,
but that's promising
crazy.
Also, right? Because this is the thing that we talk about this a lot, which is that people will criticize Sanders for having any overlap in supporters with Trump. That's, I think, one of his greatest strengths, is that he actually is a competitive presence as opposed to Hillary Clinton, who will bring no one away from Trump, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there's scary overlap, but it also does speak to the way that the left can tap into anger and then direct it elsewhere. Mm-hmm. In fact, going back to what you said in the beginning of the show, when I said that what you were saying sounded kind of conservative or left, I mean, that is a big theme, right? There's anger and like frustration and pain and resentment. And the question, that in itself isn't left or right. I think that people associate it with the right for various reasons, but what it's what you do with that that makes it left or right. Like, you either blame that on Mexicans and Muslims and Black people, or you blame it on the billionaires and structural inequality.
Yeah. I mean, I blame I think a lot of these small business guys or women, a lot of the small business owners can't afford to hire somebody. Brett and I run a small business now, which is funny. And we have an intense amount of work at the end of every single month. When we mail out zines, we mail out Kratom, we mail out CBD, and we have almost a couple thousand subscribers on Patreon, so we have to mail all this stuff
Can
out,
right?
Can
you explain to listeners what Kratom and CBD?
CBD is a part of... makes your body feel really good. And Kratom also makes your body feel really good. They're just legal... legal drugs, basically. Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't say it that way, but we're legal drug dealers, basically. But
You're healers.
Yes. So we mail these things out, and we really need to hire somebody. I believe that we probably need to hire somebody.
That's why I have a kid.
But we can't afford to hire somebody. And so we don't. We do it ourselves. They help, you know, but we do it ourselves, and we mail it. And And we will do that until we can afford to pay somebody a living wage and give right, them yeah. the things that they need.
You're saying it's not an excuse. You can't just say, I don't have enough money, so I'm going to exploit someone.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that these small business owners are like, I need the help. This right. sucks. All this work sucks. I hate doing this. I'm going to hire somebody. But then they're like, I'm going to also pay them. Like, in Ohio, you can pay them $7.50 an hour if you want to.
I should do that then. I should hire people in Ohio. Like, instead of hiring people in Vietnam, just, you know.
Well, that's how we're able to make our – I mean, living in Ohio is why we're able to make our living doing this, because the cost of living is a lot lower. So, I mean, we're basically making minimum wage too, but it's easier but here, there. Yeah.
Did you guys ever read, like, Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Work Week? Like, because basically it's all about life hacks, but he's basically talking about how to turn yourself, the individual, into a multinational corporation. So it's like, okay, you need to have a secretary, but if you outsource it to an English speaker in India, you only have to pay that secretary like 30 cents an hour, as opposed to paying a secretary in your own city, you know, whatever you'd have to pay, like living wages.
Brett actually last week just said, you know, if we didn't have this, I would probably be an LLC anyway. It's great.
I think everybody should open a small business and run it into the ground and write off all of your expenses. Yeah.
That's the way the tax code is set up. It's better for you to pretend that you're a corporation.
You get in trouble if you have too much money. Like, they want you to spend it, and they won't tax you if you spend it on something you need for the business. And we got to go to New York City for a business trip. So
buy a lot of bubbly while you're here.
It is as far as the working things go, is that we did add the call-in show late last year, and that has been a big help. And one of our recent shows was my favorite because there was an article about it that came out, but we had an actual post office driver call in and talk about what's called Amazon Sundays. And that is they have to guarantee Amazon guaranteed packages will be delivered on Sunday, so they are required to work Sundays now, and it's until the work is done. It's not like a set shift, so he's going and finishing up other people's routes, and it might be a 6-hour day, it might be a 12-hour day. That's how an Amazon Sunday works. So we got the...
It's not a Brazilian-style dessert, Amazon.
No. Do they get paid overtime if they go over, or is it just a set? Is it their salary?
Well, he's in the contract program. So you have to do it as a contractor before, and then you get offered full-time status. And he was saying that he's at the point where he doesn't know if he wants the full-time status, because it just seems like the conditions aren't going to get any better.
That's the thing. They need to hire more people. The post office is not hiring more people, but they're running more boxes. Bigger and bigger
mostly
boxes.
Because of your Patreon.
Yes, well, that's true.
I mean, Amazon Pantry is the thing that he singled out as being the main problem. So it's a box that they deliver to your house. It's that Amazon tells you how much space is left in the box so that you fill it up maximum amount. Better. And these guys are carrying these huge boxes upstairs a lot of time. Like, they didn't sign up for that. They signed up to put envelopes in a mailbox. That was the job, and they're not hiring more people. I think they're even laying people off, if I'm not mistaken.
Everything you're saying, I'm reading the headlines today in the New York Times about Donald Trump going to war with Amazon, like he's trolling Jeff Bezos around how Amazon isn't paying enough in corporate taxes and how the U.S. Postal Service is exploiting they're exploiting the U.S. Postal Service.
Woke so, Trump every now and then.
Yeah, so here's this intersection between like a grievance that the progressives and liberals would have, or at least, you know, when you think about brick and mortar stores being closed down, or how these big companies that are using tech to get around sort of common, the things that in the past, expenses that have been paid and taxes that have been paid for like infrastructure, you know, Bezos is getting around that, and it's like, people who see that are only hearing Trump complain about it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Well, here's the thing that's interesting, too, is that, like, one of the businesses that we attack relentlessly as often as we can is Uline. Are you familiar with Uline? So it's logistics stuff, boxes, paper, things for work, and it's probably the cheapest that you can get, and they send out a catalog.
Yeah. Oh, ULINE.
Yeah, ULINE.
Not you lion.
Yeah.
Not you lion Ted.
The guy who owns Ted it is also business. Like a creepy conservative guy, too.
Correct? I mean, we're talking
way, way beyond that.
They mail out catalogs every month, and they have conservative screeds in them. Every single month, they have, and when I say a conservative screed, you guys might be thinking like, oh, they just talk about how they need to cut tax.
Yeah.
We're talking about like anti-marijuana, anti-abortion, their gun cultural laws in Chicago, like the gun laws in Chicago stuff, like for real, a lot of that's like the most dirty conservative stuff.
They came in with a bunch of dark money for Roy Moore to give to his campaign.
Yeah. He has a Jewish lawyer, guys. Just a kind of thing.
He did
we
say.
We have to mention that when we mentioned Roy Moore.
But
the best thing was when his wife said that. That's probably one of my favorite moments of 2017.
Fake news would tell you that we don't care for Jews. So I just want to set the record straight while they're here. One of our attorneys is a Jew.
It's a lot of my family. Like, what do you mean? He talks to the black guys at work.
Yeah, he doesn't make them go in separate beds.
We have many friends that are black, and we also fellowship with them in church and in our home.
So is ULINE like a conservative Dr. Bronner's? You know the Dr. Bronner's?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we're talking, like, they, every dirty conservative thing, they're, a lot of money goes to it.
Yeah.
Like, they're, so recently they did one of their screeds in their, catalog about Amazon putting them out of business.
Oh.
And they're mad at Amazon. They're right. Like, you can't keep using Amazon. What the heck? And I'm like, whoa, they really don't like the free market anymore.
Yeah, that's a coalition opportunity.
Yeah. They're disgusting. They are. We read, like, the first time we read their thing, people didn't believe that they put it in, because they put it in the catalog.
What did the ULINE person say?
Well, they posted like this manifesto, basically. The first heading under it is Chicago murder count.
No, we don't need your input on this.
And then the next thing, this is going to get your ire, Brett. This is what the ULINEs are up to. Marijuana. Have the politicians gone mad? Marijuana stays in your system for at least 5 days. This can affect the ULINE warehouse employees who go up on 30 feet in the air to pick products off the shelves. It affects your children or grandchildren who may be busy telling you it's safer than alcohol. It's bad news. It remains a gateway drug. Affordable health care. It's a no-can-do right now for middle-class people working for smaller companies. Oh my God, this is
no. You got a job, goddammit. You don't have to. You don't get a promise that you're going to be healthy. You better stay healthy.
It's unfair for the unemployed to receive free health care while the premiums for the middle class have largely shot to the moon. Man, Liz ULINE, maybe you can't afford to be in bit. If you can't pay your employees health care, I mean, it seems like the marketplace has told you can't have that many employees. Gonna have to only have a few, I guess, you know?
Yeah, not now. I mean, we're about to get lean times with the healthcare.
Yeah, no can do right now. Nope, we're not going to do that for you. And then they're like, and also, please take it away from the unemployed. If we're not getting it, then they shouldn't get it, is the next header. State of California. Stop, the rules and regulations of the state are unbearable, whether it's lunch breaks or VOCs and aerosols. The list goes on and on. California needs a turnaround. Boy, is Texas happy. She is mad because of lunch breaks. Do you believe they send these to their customers? That's the customers? Right, yeah. That's what I'm trying to say, is this person is like, look, I run a fucking company here. I have a platform, and I need to use it, okay? And this is, they send this to people in the mail, like, because nobody that works for her can be like, hey, that's a little weird, that shit you said.
Yeah, why did you go that far?
Your opinions are offensive to a lot of people, and I probably wouldn't send that out.
I can't imagine, like, being like, I would like to sell you some boxes, and also a little bit of racism. Yeah.
And also warn you, give you a heads up about the Antichrist.
Yeah, that women have to wear skirts to work there, that they're not allowed to wear pants.
Yeah.
There are people of color at this place that have been drug tested 15 times in 2 months. Like, yeah, that it's a common thing that they profile the people to drug test. And, like, the people that...
Your number keeps coming up.
Yeah. The people that call in, that we've had a few people that call in that work there, and it seems like a very miserable place. And
surprisingly enough.
Yeah. Well, so's Amazon, though. It seems like Amazon's the same thing. All my old friends that I hung out with growing up, they built an Amazon warehouse just outside of Columbus, and all of them work there.
You guys are like a hotline.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, we've turned into that call-in show to me, and a lot of people have rallied around it because it's like, I don't know why, but nobody's ever decided like, hey, we're going to talk about what it's like to really what it's like to work and not and get paid and have to live on whatever the money is that you, because we talk about things like we bought, one of the first things Brett and I bonded over was that we both got stuck in a payday advance like spiral in our lives, like 5 years of getting payday advances where like, you know, please don't make me think of the amount of money that I've paid to CheckSmart in my life. So, like, it's just nobody talks about these things on the radio. And it seems very weird that, like, radio has been around forever and nobody's been like, what is your actual real life like? Like, what is it like to really live life? And, like, when we hear these things... First of all, I've been through a lot of the stuff because we've both had every single kind of shitty job. Mm-hmm. But like, even the people who like their jobs have very legitimate gripes and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted to bring that up, like that we talk about the working class, but it's always like an abstract, like some coastal elite abstract talking about what's going on. And then I listened to Street Fight and the gripes from normal, like everyday people. And how it reminds me of like Dan Carlin's hardcore history, because like, you know, you read a history book and you hear about like the great players in history, but Dan Carlin talks about like what the experience of like
the everyman,
what the guy in the trench, what his life was like. He might make a composite character, and the same thing with like, you know, what happens when you have to go and get your checks cashed every week.
Right.
It's like what Unamuno calls intrahistoria, speaking of working class discussions, you know.
Yeah.
I think we definitely all want to talk about that Spanish philosopher when you read in AP Spanish. But yeah.
I mean, even talking about like earbuds, that's been a big thing in 2018, is that like a lot of businesses are banning earbuds, and that's been something like we bring it up on the show and people will call in and talk about it, and then I get tons of passionate DMs and stuff about like, my boss took my earbuds away, now I'm negotiating for one earbud in and one earbud out, and it's like
détente.
Yeah, and it's weird, like when you start to put all of these things together and then you start to realize that everybody's going through these sorts of things at their job, that it feels like we could really make a pretty decent list of demands.
Yeah.
Now that we kind of know what's going on, it doesn't seem that hard to figure out like, okay, so if we can't get a union here, why don't we organize around the famous thing for the IWW that oftentimes they'll start organizing around is a fan in a kitchen.
Yeah.
Like, because kitchens get so hot, people will ask for a fan, and then the boss will be like, I don't got no money for a fan. And then they have to fight for a fan, and you end up getting that. And it's like, these small steps also will lead to more money, because that's something that both of us have talked about forever, is like, the Republicans, when they get in office, right? So Donald Trump cuts taxes for people, and then my wife gets $1,000 bonus that is totally, when they send the email saying here's your $1,000 bonus, they say due to the new tax bill, here's your $1,000 bonus. And the last time we had a Republican president, he sent us all $400, $500 in the mail just out of nowhere.
People loved it.
Yeah. And Democrats Or like, we'll cut taxes on the, I mean, we'll cut taxes on small businesses and entrepreneurs and then they'll get it. And it's like, no, people want money.
Yeah.
You just have to hand them money. Yeah. That's what they want. Nobody is asking for you to do some weird like tax code
right,
thing.
Right, that they don't immediately experience in a concrete way.
Like it's, yeah. it's got to be means tested. Like that, yeah. Like we've got studies. We've figured out exactly the percentage that it breaks down for every single person.
We have
person.
Some white papers. We'd like some emails to you if you'll accept these attachments. Yeah.
Yeah, and what? So we have had some success. We've had a few people that were getting shipping supplies from Uline, and we were able to connect them with somebody that did the research and got like someone got all of their pallets from a place in Kentucky instead of Uline. Someone got their boss, told their boss all about the politics. They had like a progressive boss, and they switched immediately to another wow. company. And we've also found that there are bone conducting headphones that you can wear on your cheekbones.
Oh, for swimming, I think those exist too.
They're for loud workplaces. Oh. So they're specifically for like if you're on a line and you're like, you need to be able to hear someone yelling at you, but it just like rattles your cheekbones and you can hear it like in your inner ear. So we found solutions to these.
Yeah.
So you can listen to music, you're saying, or podcasts yeah. on these bone conducted whatever thing, headphones.
They look like regular headphones, except for they just rest like right on your under your temples, like on your cheek.
Yeah. Wow. And the Uline thing, always, if you work for a place that uses Uline, send just tweet at the Street Fight WCRS account and we'll retweet it. Or send an email, we'll retweet it, we'll get it on the show, and we'll find a solution that is not Uline for you. We've done it a bunch of times.
I love this is an episode where we're targeting one petty tyrant.
Yes.
Hey, one episode, one tyrant at a time.
I mean, they are really that's a lot of money. If you start looking into the amount of money that they're putting out there for these conservative causes or for Donald Trump, that you will be like, okay, I want to take them down. My dream is unionizing Uline.
Yeah.
So that, because I feel like they'll just be like, now we're just going to go out of business. Like, we'll just close up shop if it's going to be. But my dream is like one day Uline having to go through the like, oh, they unionized. Dang it. Now we have to deal with this now.
Yeah. So you mentioned the IWW, the Wobblies, right? So I'm working class adjacent, or I'm first generation non-working class. So my mom's side of the family, at least, very working class. And, you know, my uncle stayed very working class and had the very working class accent, New York accent, and talk like that. And my mom is bilingual, so she talks like this in front of us. But then, like, literally when I was growing up, if she got a call, she'd be like, hello, hi, yeah, this is she. Hold on one second. Back when there's call waiting. She'd be like, hello, hi, am I? Yeah, how you doing? Like, total code switching. But it is true that when I talk about stuff, about class stuff, it's not from the trenches, so to speak. Although I feel like my politics were very much informed by my mom's working class origins. But flipping this on the other side, I guess, has your existence changed since you've been doing this show? Are you now talking less as part of something and more as a former part of something?
Have you guys gone Hollywood?
Kind of. I mean, not...
We love $10 juices.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Actually, that's true.
Coconut water is amazing. Let's not lie.
I did it for a long time. I'm talking about my past experiences a lot. And I wouldn't call myself working class anymore. I don't make a... We make... I mean, I'll tell you what we make. We make $2,000 a month because, you know, everything else is overhead. So we're really not making a ton of money. but we can live on so much
that's
less.
It's like $50,000 here is $2,000 yeah. Yeah. So in Columbus, right?
We can live on less. We're very used to not having a ton. Right. You know, we still have to hustle. You know, this job is not a thing where you get to just like rest ever. You're still hustling all the time. You're still trying to figure out new ways to make a living. But yeah, I think that we're out of the, having been out of the world where we have to have a job. I haven't had a job since 2016. I haven't had a real job. This is a job.
Yeah, right.
But like, we're always like probably 2 months away from going back to doing a real job, you know? And like, we do hear a lot from people, like we're relaying stories now,
yeah.
I think is what we're doing. We're trying to like create almost like a database of what the issues are that real people are dealing with. And I don't even think it needs to be working class people. I think people that work in an office are people that are also being very taken advantage of. Like they're losing stuff too,
which is a great organizing opportunity, right? Because you can have people, it doesn't have to be like gilded.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be guilds or like coal miners and teachers. You know, there can be actually like a labor movement, organizing movement that incorporates.
Nobody likes the mandatory lunch meeting.
No.
Right.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody likes mandatory. I think salary is the biggest scam in the world. Salary. And here, people that work in offices now or that work in call centers now are mostly being like drained of their work by this contracting thing. They're like, oh, you have to be a contractor and then we're going to go ahead and hire you. But they don't end up hiring many people, and they just get the amount of work that they can get out of that person for the cheapest amount of money and then send them out of the way. And these are people that are probably making, you know, six figures. There are a lot of people that are maybe making six figures a year that are being taken advantage of this. Or salary, when somebody makes $40,000 a year on salary, but they're working like 80 hours a week, that's a ripoff. Yeah, that's not fair. Right. You know?
Why is there, there's also, you have to ask. Ask for what you want. Like they're like, well, what's your what do you ask? What's your ask to, and the boss either hires you or doesn't based on what your bid is.
Yes, yes.
And then you and you're like, yes, I thought I did it. And then you and then your employee, your coworkers are making $10,000 more than you are because you underbid yourself.
Yeah.
And this is the issue with like income inequality between men and women. Is they're saying, well, the women just aren't asking for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why don't you just state it transparently?
Yeah,
you know, right. Or break it down so that we can all see. At least as a teacher, there are steps. So, you know, if you're 4 years in, you know exactly how much money you're making.
Right.
And then another year in, it's like the 5 year you get the bump. Yeah. So I remember being in a teacher's lounge and I was always, it was absurd because I would like show my paycheck.
Me too.
And older teachers would be like, why are you telling people how much you make? And I'm like, dude, I can calculate. How long have you been doing this? I can calculate exactly how much you make. Like, there's
why would you show your paycheck? You're just like, ask someone out on a date and like,
dude, you know me?
I do it.
Yeah, I was just bawling out in the teacher's lounge.
I
like, oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to drop that.
Yeah.
At the cable company, and I tell the story all the time, at the cable company, there was this guy. I'm working there. I don't know how long I had been working there at the time. But there was this guy that was like two positions above me and we're having a conversation and I was like, I make $16.85 an hour. And he was like, I make 11. I'm like, you ought to go ask for another $6 an hour because you're like two. And then that made me realize like, they just don't want us to talk about how much we make.
Because exactly,
if we start, because Brett.
That's why it's, sorry, keep going.
Brett's an incredible, he's lost jobs. Like, you got to tell him on this show, the Texas place, that you went in with some paperwork. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of my biggest small tyrants was, I had a guy that I was really good at eBay, which is like a weird thing that only some people know it makes sense. I was that person. So he needed an eBay guy. And he would come in every single day and he would say, Brett, most of this stuff we got here, I got for free anyway. So whatever you make on it, that's all profit. And so he set this thing for me to sell $27,000 worth of stuff, which is just stuff he got for free. And he would give me a cut of it, like $250. I sold $25,000 worth of stuff and didn't get the bonus. And then I pulled out some paperwork and was like, if I'm doing the math correctly, conservatively, you've only paid me about $1,600 of the $25,000 that I made for you. And all I'm asking is for $225 more. And when I got back to work on Monday, there was a brand new employee. And I'm like, that guy's my replacement. And I was fired within 2 weeks.
So how did you get paid anything?
I did get paid. I didn't get my bonus, no. But I did. I had like a. I stole so much stuff when I left that I had like several thousand dollars. I found he had these really tiny. They were like for museums for like the hearing impaired. Like for the. They're basically an RF unit, so you can hand out 50 of these boxes, and it's tied to one person's headphone, so they can like lead you through a museum. They're very specialized, and they're worth a ton of money.
So you just sell them in turn.
Yeah, yeah. I just offloaded a whole bunch of them.
And anyone who if someone dates you and they get one of these things, don't think it's a special Valentine's Day present. Guys, you've been duped.
Right.
But that's true. Like when you were saying, it's so gauche, right? It's considered taboo to talk about salary and stuff. And that's like a very convenient thing to stop people from being having any kind of class consciousness or awareness just of what is happening to them and what could be happening to them, how they could be getting more.
Yeah, the payday advance stuff. That's the really when we bonded over the payday advance thing, it was because there's so much shame wrapped around that. Nobody wants anybody to know that they're doing payday advance.
Can you talk about payday advance?
So I don't know if they have them here, but in Ohio, there's these places basically that you can go to and you can write a check for them post-dated 2 weeks for, okay, so I would do it for $500. You write a check for $575, you post-date it for 2 weeks, they hand you $500. What ends up happening though, is that as you pay them back, once you pay it back, you need it again. And you have to just keep rotate every 2 weeks, you end up going to a payday advance place and writing over part of your check and just losing part of your $75 usually, or even more now, they let you write for like $800 to $1,000 now. And I mean,
that was probably more than 10% of my income when I was writing for that, though, the $75.
Yeah, and we've known people that go to one payday advance place and get the advance so that they can pay off one at another place. And like, it just becomes like this thing where they are taking money from people who really need it. And I recently did this on a show. I was making about $700 every 2 weeks. I go to the payday advance place. I pay the $575 back. And then I have $225 to get me through Saturday and Sunday, you know, get some groceries or something like that. But then I'm broke on Monday. I go and write for $500 again, and then I start over. And I did this for years, and this business wasn't providing me with really anything. They were just siphoning off $75 every 2 weeks from me.
And it's not helping your credit score either.
No.
You're not you're not accruing any sort of like goodwill or points in that you're paying this back.
Yeah, and people get them. A lot of people get them. And we've had callers and emails tell us that they get them. But they don't tell anybody. Nobody wants to be seen there. You know, nobody wants anybody to know that that's what they're doing because it's kind of a shameful thing. It's also one of those places that you can go and pay your bills and you pay an extra whatever amount on top of your bills if you don't have a bank account.
Yeah.
So if you're very poor.
Yeah.
And you're like almost off the grid, but you still need money. The Pay-O-Matics, they're all over Greenpoint.
Yeah. And it's like, so if there's tons of people doing this, then it means that there's tons of people that are, their bank accounts are kind of fucked up. And we talk about that a lot. We talk about the amount of money in our bank accounts a lot of times. We have a running joke on our show about the last time that we overdrew our bank accounts. You know, it's been, you know, they have those accidents.
Yeah.
It's been this many days since there was an accident on a job site. We do. It's been this many days since we've overdrawn our bank account. And people overdraw their bank accounts all the time, and they get these $35 to $50 fees over and over again. And if you're overdrawing your bank account, you can't afford to pay the $150 to $200 in fees, obviously. And it puts you in a crappy position. But we're being told all the time that we live in the greatest country in the world, and we have this, even poor people have a high level of privilege. Oh, poor people have Xboxes and refrigerators you know? And it's like, but it sucks. Like, it just...
they can also die of, like, appendicitis.
Yeah, and you just want to tell people, like, if you don't talk about these things ever, these things that we're ashamed of when it comes to money and stuff, then nobody... necessarily, everybody feels like, oh, I can't complain. You know, I live in America. I have an Xbox. I'm able to do this. And it's like, I'm able to go to Chuck E. Cheese once a month or something like that with the kids. And you're like, no, that sucks though. It kind of sucks. And if everybody realizes that it sucks, I think, then we start to figure out what are these things we can do to make it not suck as much. And that's when we start talking about what if you didn't have to worry about your health care?
Right.
What if you didn't have to go to a payday advance? What if the post office did your banking for you? What if banking was nationalized? What if, and that's when you start talking about these solutions and you can have these conversations with people. But I think a lot of the anger with Hillary Clinton or the Democrats is that they don't seem to know that it sucks. Right. And they're not willing to admit that mm-hmm. it sucks. They and that's the problem.
They align themselves with like the disruptive innovators and entrepreneurs that make life even worse.
Yeah. Right. That are selling out everything.
Like Uber. Yes. Or Airbnb or Amazon.
As much as obviously I have, you know, my reputation, I think, as a Hillary critic sometimes precedes me. But as critical as I am of her and of what she represents, honestly, more than her, I mean, I almost empathized with her when she said at Goldman Sachs, she said, like, it's hard for me to be in touch with people, be in touch with what's going on because I'm so wealthy. Like, that was honest.
Sure.
And lots of people have that. She just happened to say that on hot mic. Didn't know it was being recorded.
Right. To a bunch of other people that are so wealthy. That
yeah, exactly. I just feel like that was her, like, old progressive because she did, like, she was progressive at points in her life. Like, I think the Goldwater girl argument is a bit ridiculous because I'm someone who came from a super left background. I don't get any credit for my politics, right? Like, Hillary's politics suck now, but she did go from being conservative to having some good progressive stuff mm-hmm. and working for good people, you know, doing children's anti-racism stuff, children's poverty stuff. I almost feel like that was a repressed voice of hers, like a progressive, repressed progressive voice that she had to really... she's totally abandoned, and so no one could vote for that because it wasn't there. But like from the earlier days, before she had to become a soulless, you know, like partner to Bill Clinton. But
yeah, and that's like well, what you were mentioning in the beginning about the working class being an abstract is that a lot of times it's like, what are the political beliefs of the worker? And the working is the biggest part. They all think different stuff. Nobody agrees at a job site. It's not like all, but they do have one thing in common in that they have a job. And, you know, we talk, a big one that we talk about is clopening, which I know they made illegal in New York City. And that's where you're scheduled to close and then open the next day. And that's very common in a lot of job places. So that's one of those things where it's like, I don't care about what your opinions are about anything. You know, if you're my coworker, I just want to know you're on my side if we're going to talk to the boss about getting rid of clopenings.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the things like,
That you can clopen the conversation.
Right.
The scheduling stability thing that they have in Seattle, we covered, this happened like last year, I think, and we covered it, is that they made scheduling stability laws in Seattle where your schedule had to be, I think it maybe is 2 or 3 weeks out. You needed to know your schedule at the very least.
I love knowing.
Oh my God. That's one of our grievances. I'm a small tyrant with that.
Oh yeah.
I switched up the guest last minute.
Well, have you ever worked in a restaurant at all?
Yeah.
Like my sister worked at a restaurant, right? Where she got her Saturday schedule on Friday. So she didn't know what time she had to work on Saturday until Friday. And how do you ask somebody to do that? Like, how does that something that's been able to make it all these
years?
That
seems like such overt, like, it's almost like the Marxist thing about how, you know, capitalism is going to be so exploitative and it's going to be such naked exploitation that the workers will rise up because it'll suck so much. Like, that seems like such a no-brainer, something that'll make people unhappy. But I guess because people are so... the economy sucks. That's why.
Yeah. You just have to keep the job. You need the job. So you're willing to do. And like also not knowing any better when you work in a service industry and we're not an industrial nation. Everybody works in the service industry. Now you have to realize that your schedule will never be stable. Like that's something that you give up when you have to work in a service industry. So like when I worked, you know, when I worked at a restaurant, it was like my schedule was fairly stable because it was just a daytime thing. But it was like I could never expect them not to be like, oh, well, this week you work nights because we have an extra thing going on.
Yeah.
This week you don't work. You know, like I worked at McDonald's was my first job and I never had the same schedule every week. It seems pretty
folks and fun.
Yeah. It seems fairly easy, right? That like you run this business, it's the same amount of business all the time. It's the same people there. Why does my schedule have to be different every week? It seems like all of this is very predictable. And they don't treat it as predictable though. They want you to be, it feels like they want you to always be on your heels. Yeah. They always want you to be like not quite sure what's going on.
Yeah, not grounded enough or centered enough to... Speaking of which, what's up with the psychedelic stuff? How did that start?
We just really like doing drugs. We've always been big fans of drugs.
What, I mean, you said that you had one of your political awakenings. Can you tell us about that?
So I was actually told that, like, weed... The only story I got about my parents about drugs was that my mom saw somebody on the news that went to go score a lid of marijuana, and they got killed. And that was the talk. And then... as soon as I moved out and someone was like, you want to try it? And they're all doing it and nobody's dying and there's no scary drug dealer. It's actually just a really cool guy with like a Papasan chair.
And to hear the rest of our interview with Street Fight co-hosts Brett Payne and Brian Quimby, please go to patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Again, that's patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. Street Fight Radio is the number one anarcho comedy show on any station across the nation. 3 shows a week. Live call-in show on WCRS Community Radio 92.7 in Columbus, Ohio, every Sunday at 10 p.m. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and other podcasting apps. And also, please check their Patreon out, which is patreon.com/streetfightradio. And to find out more about them, go to streetfightradio.com. You can find them on Twitter at StreetFightWCRS. Again, that's StreetFightWCRS. You can find Brett and Brian on Twitter. Brett is Brett Payne, BRETTPAIN. Brian is Murder Brian. That's Murder, BRYAN. And of course, you can find me, Katie Halper, at KT Halps. That's letter K, letter T, HALPS. And you can find Gabe at Gabe_Pacheco. And, of course, find us and rate us and review us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook. Thanks so much for listening to The Katie Halper Show. See you next week.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.